From the WLRN studios at the Miami Herald, I'm Christine DiMattei. On Monday, President Trump put in a very long-distance call to the International Space Station to congratulate astronaut Peggy Whitson on surpassing the 534-day record for most time in space by an American.
It's an honor for me basically to be representing all the folks at NASA who make this spaceflight possible and who make me setting this record feasible.
Right now, it's only Whitson and four more astronauts up there. But in the coming years, it might get a bit more crowded. With more private firms like SpaceX getting into the act, the prospect of ordinary people venturing into outer space is, well, taking off. Up at our sister station, WMFE in Orlando, reporter Brendan Byrne has one of the coolest beats imaginable. He focuses on space and science news, including launches from Florida's Space Coast. He's also the host of WMFE's weekly podcast titled Are We There Yet?, which examines efforts to get human beings to the planet Mars. And Brendan Byrne joins us now. It's so great to have you on.
Hey, thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Now, last month, the president signed a new NASA bill. What precisely is in it?
Well, the bill basically is the footprint of this administration's space exploration goals. So during a presidential transition period, you tend to see these NASA authorization acts. And they're very broad goals, get humans to Mars by X amount of time, explore this particular area, continue funding commercial space ventures, but nothing really detail-oriented just yet. So all of that will come when Congress goes to appropriate funds for NASA. But in this bill, the president is calling for about $19 billion for NASA, which is pretty status quo. That's what they've been operating under for a while. But it really does set the sights for exploration of Mars and human boots on the ground on the red planet.
Now, didn't funding for NASA and space exploration take a big hit for a while there, Brendan?
It did, but it's more of where the money is going. So that's what NASA administrators are concerned with is where you're going to fund the money. When we had the retirement of the space shuttle program, obviously human exploration was cut significantly there. But now you're starting to see more and more money being put into the human exploration aspect of it. But over the past, let's say, half decade, 5 years or so, it's been about $19 billion. But that chunk of the pie has kind of moved around a bit. And that's where, planetary scientists are really excited about this budget proposal from the Trump White House, because it has quite a bit of money going into planetary exploration, but it also cuts quite a bit of money from Earth observation. So they're excited, but they don't want to get too excited because they know some of their colleagues are being defunded or getting less funding as well. So it's kind of a glass half full, half empty kind of thing you have to look at when it comes to this $19 billion. But the $19 billion there is what NASA asked for, and they've been quite happy with it over the years.
In the 1960s, the objective was pretty clear. We had to get to the moon by 1970. If Mars is the new objective, what are the next steps for NASA? Let's suppose they do get the funding.
Well, the next steps is we have to relearn how to work in deep space. When astronauts went to the moon in the Apollo program, that was the last time humans have been to deep space. Right now, we are only kind of living and working in what's called low Earth orbit, which is where the International Space Station resides. And that's not very far. You're still in the protection of Earth's magnetic field, and you're not very far from home. The last round of astronauts that went up there just about a week ago, it took them about 6 hours from the launch to when they docked with the International Space Station. Now, if we're going to go to Mars, that's a 20-month trip, depending on where Mars is at that particular time that we launch. Even going back to the moon is more than it's about 6-day-long trip to get there. You're looking at 250 miles up to 250,000 miles away when you talk about the moon. So really, the problem is learning to live and work in deep space once again for an extended period of time. The Apollo trips were very, very quick in comparison to a Mars mission architecture, which is, you know, 1,000 days that an astronaut is going to be traveling to the red planet. And so we're starting to kind of do stuff like that. If you'll recall, there was the Year in Space experiment with Scott Kelly, who spent consecutively I think it was a little bit under a year in space. And they used his twin brother, Mark, as a control down here on Earth to kind of see what things happen to your body when you're in space for that long. So we're still getting the research in on that. But that's only a year. If we're going to Mars, it's going to be quite a bit of time. So we're still taking baby steps to learn what happens to the human body when you're in space for that long.
During the Apollo program, the space race referred to the United States versus the Russians. Is the new space race between NASA and private companies like SpaceX?
Well, when you ask people, it's kind of a mixed bag there. If you ask folks at NASA or if you ask people in the commercial space industry, they'll say it's not a race. We're working together to accomplish all of these goals. But as an observer, when you talk to the public about it, it does very much seem like a race. Who is going to get to the moon first? Who is going to get to Mars first? But when you talk to folks in both camps, it is a collaborative effort. Just this morning, there was a Senate hearing where the president of Blue Origin was testifying before Senator Ted Cruz and Senator Bill Nelson on this Science and Space and Transportation Committee meeting. And he says that they would make a substantial investment on setting up a base on the moon, but it would require NASA's help. Similarly, SpaceX wants to put a capsule on Mars. It's called the Red Dragon. But they need NASA's help. They are not able to communicate with their spacecraft, so they would have to rely on NASA's deep space network of satellites and telescopes to talk to it. In return, NASA said, hey, we'll go ahead and help you with that mission, but we'd like to learn how you land your capsule on the red planet. So we'll give you communication to your capsule if you tell us what you've learned from the mission. So it's very, very much a collaborative effort. But on the outside, when you look at headlines and the media portrayal of it, it does seem like Elon Musk versus NASA kind of thing. And when you boil it all down, it's really not a competition. It's a collaborative effort between both private and public entities.
Brendan, how did you get into space reporting? Why did you want to take on this beat?
Well, I was terrible at math, so I couldn't be an engineer or an astronaut. So I became a writer instead. I grew up in South Florida. I went to school down there in Broward County, and I was lucky enough in the fifth grade to go to space camp. I wasn't too excited to go, but my dad was, and he wanted to be a chaperone, so he made me go because you can only chaperone if your kid went. And he had a blast at space camp, and that kind of rubbed off on me. And ever since then, I've always looked towards the sky and watched the shuttle launches when I was living down there. I was very very into the shuttle launches. But then when I got to high school and college, I realized I didn't have the chops to be an engineer or a scientist at that point. When I got to WMFE, I call it the hangover phase of the space shuttle program. And there really wasn't too much public interest in space. And I made the argument to, hey, there's a lot of cool stuff happening. Let's see if our listeners are interested in it. And they were. So we started focusing more and more on space reporting. And I like to think, since I'm the only one in the newsroom that went to space camp, I was the the most qualified person to cover this beat.
When you're out reporting on the space program and talking to the man or woman on the street, how much does the average person know about NASA and space exploration?
Well, that's also kind of a mixed bag, too. There's some people that you talk to and they say, hey, when's the next shuttle launch? And I have to remind them, well, we haven't had a shuttle launch in 6 years. But then it's my job to kind of educate them and let them know what else is going on. Then there's other people in our listening area that are, you know, either worked for NASA or worked very close with the aerospace industry or still do. Who are very interested in the program. One of the things that we like to do here at our station is really get out in the community and talk to the community. And I've given quite a few public talks and speeches about space exploration, space technology. And then when you start talking about this stuff, like, people's eyes just, they can't get enough of it. So the average person out there doesn't really know a lot about it, just because it's not as headliny and in their face as it used to be. But the appetite is definitely there. So now that there's more rocket launches happening here on Florida's Space Coast, you can start to see people really, really want their space news and really, really want their space programs.
Brendan, this is a time in our country's history where the American public is sort of like riveted upon what the government is spending on, how they're spending taxpayer money. How often is it that you hear, space program, waste of money, we have problems we got to work out down here first?
Quite a bit. And, you know, I think that that's kind of the goal of NASA and the reason that NASA has always been so public about what they do is because it really is a lot of money for a lot of stuff that people aren't going to get to experience. I mean, the Apollo program was billions and billions and billions of dollars, and only a dozen people got to walk on the moon, you know? But it's all the stuff that comes out of the space program that you have to remind people about, or, you know, just that human spirit of exploration. And if you can tell a great story about exploration, you can really get that little piece inside of somebody that wants to know the answer to something that they don't know. But it's a very, very hard sell for NASA. It is a lot of money when you look at the actual number itself. But then when you look at it in comparison to other things that we spend money on, it's really not that much. But you're right. It's very difficult to kind of justify spending $19 billion a year on sending a robot to Mars. How is that going to affect the average person?
When it comes to space exploration and science reporting, who are your greatest influences?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, I grew up in the age of Bill Nye. The science guy. And so the way that Bill is able to kind of make really difficult concepts accessible to everyone is something that I strive to do in my reporting. You know, not a lot of people know what a geostationary transfer orbit is or even what a first stage booster is. So I have to remember that and kind of channel my inner Bill Nye and kind of tell that story. Now, when it comes to great aerospace reporters, I have the pleasure of working Kennedy Space Center with Marcia Dunn, Irene Klotz, and James Dean, the AP Reuters and Florida Today. That are just fantastic journalists, and I get to, you know, stand shoulder to shoulder with them out at the Kennedy Space Center. I'm still pretty green to being out there. You know, it's only been about 2 years that I've been doing this. So it's nice to kind of chat with them and see how they operate and try to see what their questions are that they ask in the press gaggle. And then there's some old timers that stop by, which are really great, like Jay Barbary. He covered every human launch from Kennedy Space Center ever. So it's really neat to be able to talk with him and chat with him about the good old days and all that. So I'm very lucky to be where I am and to be able to talk with the people that I do.
Brendan, one of the abiding dreams among people who are in the federal space program as well as the private sector is commercial space travel. Getting on the shuttle, ordinary people like you and me, and just going. How many decades is it going to take, do you think?
A solid guess. If I had a crystal ball or a magic eight ball, I would say about a decade and a half, maybe about 15 years we would be at that point. Suborbital, which is just at the boundary of space, not actually going into Earth orbit, I think that's much sooner than that. But getting just average people like yourself and me up into space, I think we're quite a bit a ways away from that at this point. But I'm very excited for that to happen. But yeah, I think we're about maybe 10 or 15 years away from that.
Tell you what, Brendan, if we go, I got the window seat, okay?
Sounds good. I'll gladly give you the window seat as long as I have a seat.
WMFE reporter Brendan Byrne, he covers space and science news, including virtually every launch from Cape Canaveral. He's also the host of WMFE's weekly space exploration podcast, Are We There Yet?, which examines human travel to Mars. Brendan, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine. Thank you so much for having me.
This is WLRN News. I'm Christine DiMattei.